This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, and with me, Cam Rasslan, today we have two of BFM's finest. She is with the video team here at BFM. She is Rahma Pauzi.
Hi, hello.
Hello, and we have the producer of A Bit of Culture. He is Ali Johan.
Hi again.
Hello.
It's good to be back.
Our three topics this week are: topic number one is delete Facebook. Topic number two is tapai. And finally, topic number three is reunions and or comebacks.
Mm.
So with topic number one, delete Facebook. You know, if you are a con man and you want to set up a Ponzi scheme, or you just want to steal money from people, the thing that con men do is that they would go and find a unit of people who are already enclosed in a community. So church groups are a very popular target. In that church group, say, for instance, you would target the supposed leaders of it, the moral leaders, be it the pastor or just people who are considered to be authorities in that space. Once you have their trust, their confidence, they will then pass down to everyone else a sense of confidence in you, so that everyone will go, well, I must trust him because the authority person has trust them. So I'm going to give money. And Facebook does the same kind of thing.
I was hoping, where would it get to?
Yeah,
Facebook,
is it a scam? Is Facebook a scam?
Well, it has so many markings of a scam. Hmm. In the last few years, Facebook has found itself embroiled in several scandals involving data harvesting, one of which they said, oh, we're completely innocent, we had no idea. But then some of them, not so innocent. Closely aligned to, not, or just connected with, or a little too close to the evil empire aspect of Cambridge Analytica. And then there is, of course, the person of Mark Zuckerberg, who one person pointed out, actually his Madame Tussauds wax likeness actually looks more human than the actual Mark Zuckerberg.
Ouch.
You should go. And when you put the images together, it is kind of frightening. And he just had, for instance, just had dinner recently with Donald Trump. What's that about? And so I have found myself, I do have a Facebook account. I know we three do.
Yeah.
Rahma, I know you don't use yours terribly much.
Yeah, not that much anymore. But I quite like using it sometimes.
And you, Ali?
Yeah, not active on it, but I'll borrow Daryl Ong's words. I'm a social media voyeur.
Yeah,
I like that.
Yeah,
you
that's
just
a good
yourself,
one.
Right?
To me, I'm okay. This might sound like weird. I'm a social media groupie. The only reason why I'm still on Facebook is because the groups like sometimes they like offer jobs
okay.
or insights and all that. So the groups is what I'm there
serve
for.
You.
All
right.
Hmm.
Something
oh, okay.
to do with the news feed. So like, I don't care about my friends on Facebook.
Same,
either.
Same.
Yeah.
Mm.
Well, I have found myself not looking at my Facebook feed anymore, and I'm sort of thinking I should delete this, but I just can't quite do it.
Why is that?
Why can't I do it?
Yeah, why can't you do it?
Because people I know and respect are on there, and I know that they pour their heart and souls out on postings sometimes, and so I feel like I should be there.
Yeah, I understand.
And I sometimes think that I would like to actually.
So what you're saying is that you feel like you need to be there because someone has vested their time and was hoping that an audience would be there for that?
Yes.
Yeah. But you got to understand, people like that who use Facebook to express themselves in great writing are actually those kind of people. They are comfortable with doing that on a social media platform. And the likes of us who don't post and are contemplating on deleting our accounts are probably the opposite, but we enjoy their bravery, I guess, for lack of a better word, to be on the social media platform. Case in point, I follow Mr. Activist, Fahmi Reza. I love his posts, everything from music or politics and satire, graphic design, blah, blah, blah. Joe Kukatas is another person that I love.
That's who I'm thinking of.
Right? And and she writes monologues, are they called monologues? With about her cats. I always reflect on those people who put in the effort and have the talent to do this.
Yeah.
The rest of us are just like scrolling, clicking, and checking out what's happening.
And to me, I've been thinking about deleting Facebook, but at the same time, I realize that I'm much more of a protester and much cooler if I'm on Facebook and not use it. So Facebook has all this data on me, but they don't have it enough. They cannot really do much. Like, so I feel like I'm winning.
She's such a nothing, right? She's just a
so
dot
like
in the
I'm
statistic.
I'm winning at this game. It's like, I just came to terms with this phase like a couple months ago when I realized, so the more I don't like, the more I don't click, the more I just linger at one post, the more confusing I think it would become.
Yeah, I thought the same thing, but I somehow sometimes think that Facebook have a place and a corner for the likes of us.
Yeah, they've got you sorted out. They have got you triangulated.
They know that we're not going to do anything, but they know our every move somehow.
They do. I was just talking to somebody describing how, you know, Facebook has you triangulated. They have other points of data points as well. Mm. And he likes Facebook, and he was like, yeah, okay, so they know everything about me. So does Maxis. They've got data.
Right.
So does Netflix. So does everybody.
Hmm.
What can you do? But I like the product and I'll just carry on.
Yeah. But you don't like Facebook and that's why you have issues with it. I mean, you don't mind Maxis having data on you. You don't mind Grab having data on you.
It's a lost fight.
Hmm.
You know, the data is out there. Everybody's got the data. I don't know. I don't even know what that means.
Yeah.
I'm Rahma. You're the Katniss of... of Facebook, because you're like throwing them off the scent. Like, who is this?
At least in my mind, I feel like I'm winning something.
I love that you think that.
Kate Crusader. I don't understand her.
Yeah, but
they're running down the corridor to Mark Zuckerberg's office. What does this mean?
Yeah, but every time you log in, they know. Every single time, and you log into it every day, multiple times in a day, right? And they know.
No, Ali, give her this.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I'm exactly like Rahma. We're like quietly on the account, looking at, you know, other postings of people, sometimes a rare like here and there, but...
Yeah.
I'm the same. But it's a lost cause. It's one of those, I think, social media platforms that... And I think most social media platforms have a lifespan.
Yeah.
We used to be on Friendster, MySpace and all that. And all of that died.
Yeah.
And young
people
are not going to Facebook.
And also... doesn't mean that they're not going to come back.
Yeah.
Like when I think like a couple of years ago, we were like, oh, Vines is dead. Look at TikTok. That's like literally like an emerging. It's literally Vine, right?
Yeah, re-emerging in another
name.
So
maybe it will come back again.
I don't know. I've been waiting for Flair Jeans to come back. It never has.
maybe it will, like in a different way.
Yeah.
I don't think Facebook is able to revamp itself anymore.
It just go and buy.
It carries so much baggage.
It went and bought WhatsApp. It'll just go buy.
Yeah, maybe it's just going to be on WhatsApp.
Yeah.
But Instagram is the way to go, Cam.
Yes, you should be on it.
Yeah.
I know you forgot your password, but just create a new account.
Figure it out.
Okay, all right, already. I'll do it. Okay, so we move on, though, to from one extreme to the other. Top number two, Rahma, tapai.
Okay, so this is another Rahma anecdotal story again.
Rahma doodle.
Tapai. So tapai is Malay language for fermented. Usually you would assume that it's fermented rice. And then, like, I think if you like keep it slightly longer, then it becomes tua and then becomes like alcoholic. So my grandmother raised her family, I think, like for the last few years of her working life, selling tapai. And she's from Penang, from the mainland Penang. While my grandmother, so that's on my dad's side. My grandmother on my mom's side is from Johor. I was also Javanese, ethnic-wise. I think spent most of her life selling tapai ubi, tapioca tapai.
Wow.
So to support her living. Growing up, I remember really liking the rice tapai, the fermented rice. And... it's apparently like it's not like a thing that people that kids at that age, like 5 years old, like be enjoying this thing. To me, it's just like it has a gassy, really soft texture, and I loved rice. I remember like growing up, my mom and my grandmother tried to sell me this other tapioca tapai. That I was just like, oh, this doesn't make any sense. Tapioca is very like it tastes like healthier, and I didn't like it. And for a while, I remember, okay, I'm never going to go back to that. So there's like two tapais in my life, but there'll be like only one tapai that I like. Mm-hmm. But since the past 10 years, and this is like talking about, I'm pretty sure like Cam, you a bit more familiar with this, but the movement of food and culture from one end of peninsula to the other end peninsula takes some time to go to each other, right? Mm-hmm. And KL becomes that like crossing line. So I remember growing up when I went to Johor, nobody's ever heard of that tapai, of the rice tapai.
The rice, not even heard of it?
No. So in Batu Pahat, at least, because of the Javanese community, like, so it's very inclusive. So they never heard of it. So the only tapai, that the moment you say tapai to this community, they thought about tapioca tapai. And then when you go to the mainland, Penang, you would think about the rice tapai. So it never crossed each other. So I'm probably like one of the very few people in my mom's side and my dad's side who's experienced both of this at such an early age. But about 10 years ago, I started noticing that whenever I go to Kenduri, I've started seeing this tapioca tapai on the tables in Penang, and I've started seeing this rice tapai on the Johorian Kenduris as well. And I thought that's like a pretty nice crossover. And since the past few years, the Johorians have started making the rice tapai and sell it also. Although that's
And you think that the tapioca sales are going down? Seriously, I mean, do you think that it's they're losing the exotic northern rice?
I think it's also because it's such, you have to harvest tapioca.
Yeah,
but rice you can just buy anywhere. So I think before the community, you have to like wait for these trees to like grow, because I had a lot of these trees around my house, the tapioca trees. Mm-hmm. And my mom would like, you know, take it out and stuff. And I remember it being like, oh my God, it's so hard because like it grew in the ground and all that. And I hated it. And I think maybe it's also like the sense of, you no longer have these trees and rice is the only thing that, you know, that's available for you. So although you're Javanese and that's kind of like your food, right now if you talk to like a lot of my cousins, the younger ones, the moment you think about tapai, the first thing they would think about is the rice tapai.
So you, Rahma, you are a fusion of cultures.
I'm a fusion.
You are a crossroads.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And I mean, it's really interesting to see these crossing, either in culture, in food. And most of the time it's through marriage, right?
Yes.
So you marry somebody, you're from the north, you marry somebody from the south, and you carry with you the culture and the food that you grew up with, and vice versa. So it's always a thing for me to make a note of something that's not from that land or originally from there, and then suddenly you find it. So like, for example, you find Laksa Johor in Sarawak. You're like, wow, how did the Laksa Johor get to Sarawak? They have Laksa Sarawak. Nowadays, people are traveling, and so I think food comes with the people, and it's really interesting. I think tapioca in itself is harder to make.
Yes.
The tapai ubi though. So the rice tapai is much simpler.
Yeah,
it seems,
and more accessible.
And tapioca is more expensive, isn't it?
I had no idea. Is it more expensive?
Well, I'm guessing it is because I watched a documentary on the growing of tapioca in Sarawak and the harvesting, and it's like it was hard work. And you have to float it down the river, and it was
so in a way we should be really expecting the fading out of the tapioca tapai, but somehow she's finding it in another part of the country.
Yeah,
but it's exotic. You're exotic north and south, aren't you? Part
I think
of you.
So.
You go up north and you're like all Javanese and
exactly.
That's so exotic.
Like, what do you mean you're from Johor? Yeah, I've never seen. But so that's I've begin realizing that I love both, and I've started like loving tapioca tapai more now that I'm like seeing it more often. I guess maybe it used to be such a like a rarity for me because rice tapai was like a lot easier for me to get.
So you're the child of, and you find it easier. But what about your parents? Have they managed to make the switch?
They love both. I think dad recently started realizing that he didn't mind tapioca tapai. He thought he loved rice tapai so much.
Maybe
we just perfect it a lot better.
Yeah. I mean, obviously there's more rice in the north.
Yeah.
More tapioca farms in the south of Malaysia, probably, right? But I've never seen a tapai ubi in my life, ever.
Well, I have to bring that one these days.
I've always only been exposed to the rice tapai.
Okay. Well, so it's great to be able to witness cultural exchange and history being made. Because you are the person who essentially, you're the kind of person who created something like laksa, like curry mee.
Because I bring these two together.
Two together. Somebody had noodles. And then someone else had curry and said, let's put the two together. No, that's insane. And then Rahma would have walked along and go, make it happen. Okay. Well, you're going to bring the, you're going to have to bring the
tapioca. Yeah, I would have to get you guys to taste
tapai ubi,
of course.
Please.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Okay, so in a moment we have we're going to have the topic that Ali Johan wants to bring to us, which is comebacks / reunions here on A Bit of Culture, BFM 89.9. And we're back with myself, Cam Ruslan, Rahma Pauzi, and now Ali Johan. Reunions and or comebacks.
Yeah, so from Facebook to Tapai to now a bit of music, because I'm always thinking about music-y things in my life. And recently, two big rock bands announced their reunion tours. American bands, obviously, My Chemical Romance and Rage Against the Machine. They're set to like tour the world and play festivals, Coachella, namely, in 2020. And, you know, old bands coming to play with a whole bunch of newer, fresher acts. And it seems like a good balance to the concert and the festival circuit. You have the nostalgia and you have the discovery bit. But my thought about it is, what if they are not as good as the first time around? Mm-hmm. If, you know, it's just lost glorified it. And over-glorified is what I'm most worried about. You expect to see the same old vibe that they carried when they were popular 15, 20 years ago.
Right.
Yeah, obviously most people are, and concert promoters more than anyone, are happy to serve the listeners a little bit of nostalgia. Hey, look at it. An old-timer to come back out of retirement and give everybody in 2020 a chance to see these people in the flesh. On top of like the time now when you can actually watch videos from 1974 on YouTube. And that's probably like the most that you could get out of right. a band that's no more around.
Yeah.
Music is no more around. And, you know, the climate has changed. What is the value of that? Or what is the value that I should be aware of or looking out for?
Rahma?
Okay, so so I recently, well, not recently, a couple months ago, I went to see Dewa.
The Indonesian band.
The Indonesian band. I loved them so much. I didn't think I loved them as much. I loved the music, essentially. So I didn't really care about those things. But I think the value was definitely looking at it being how can... It's purely the performance. So I think like if you're looking to be entertained and just looking at performance and if you don't carry this nostalgia, but I know it's tricky because usually that's what they're banking on, you know?
Yeah,
like this promoters, like that's what they're banking on. But I think like the best way to do this is not to get transported back to anywhere. I think like as with any performances, that's what you're looking for.
Like an updated version.
Yeah, just like an updated version. So don't expect it to be like a new thing.
I
think that's the beauty, you know? That's the beauty of like looking at people aging and like evolve.
Well, no.
Maybe I'm just a bit too open about this.
Maybe. I think that we have to put another factor, which is the distance of time. There needs to be, I think, a correct amount of distance of time. So I watched another great famous Indonesian band called Duran Duran. I say Indonesian band because I saw them in Jakarta. I watched them in, I think it was like 91 or 92 in the end of their world tour, and it was being held in a not very big hotel ballroom, half empty, not very big hotel ballroom. This is Duran Duran. They were like the biggest band for me in my 80s growing up. And they, in about 10 years, they dropped from being the new Beatles
right.
to a half-empty ballroom in Jakarta. But if you fast-forwarded, they were great, by the way, but it was kind of embarrassing because it's like, this is Duran Duran. And
yeah.
Just like,
yeah, yeah.
But you fast-forwarded another 10 years and they were filling the Wembley Arena for a whole week, every night. I don't know, that's like, how many? That's like 70,000 people.
Correct. And that's the game of a reunion or a comeback, right? That is the expected outcome.
But you got to time it with the aging of the audience.
Yes.
Totally. And you, like, I think when you saw them in Jakarta, they had not gone away on a hiatus or stopped playing.
Had not aged well
no,
yet.
No, not that. But I was the audience. I was the prime target audience. I had grown out of my teen years into my kind of like cool 20s, where it's like, oh, that kind of, it's a bit embarrassing, my teen years. I'm too cool for that now. I hadn't grown old enough for the nostalgia to kick in. So you got to time it just right.
Beyond the hiatus and whatnot, I think they're not antique yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, they're not cool enough to be thrifted yet.
But also not too antique.
Yeah, they're not cool enough to be thrifted yet. I wouldn't want to like wear anything from the 2000
right.
or 2010, yeah. but I would wear something from the 1990s.
Yeah.
For me, it's a bit embarrassing, like The Who. The Who are now in their 90s, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're about 150. and when they do play, they would still sing My Generation, which is the anthem from the 1960s when they were of that.
In their prime.
In their prime, they were singing about my generation. But now when it's like, I don't really want to.
Should they at least change the term to your generation?
Yeah, well, no, like, it's like.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, that's my thing. And on a personal note, I'm in a band that recently was called to make a comeback as well in this year. Yeah. And so this band that I'm in had not been active for 12 years. We played two shows. This is where the question came to me. I'm like, wow, people are into this thing. They like an old band to come back. Why? You know, when you can move on with the times.
I would still want to listen to whatever options that I have like in the past, because whatever that I have right now, musically speaking, probably like not everything is according to my taste. So I just want to like dig up things. And sometimes I started like listening to things from the 80s and 90s, not because I've encountered them before, because I just encountered them today. So it's also not about nostalgia. It's also about like the breadth of option, the ability for you to revisit these things as an audience, as a consumer, but at the same time for you to punctuate and respect these kind of demands and tendencies among consumers, I think is also important to look at.
Interesting to note, Rage Against the Machine, they're a very political punk rap band. And they always reform the year before US elections.
Oh. Ah.
So they do it for a purpose, see?
Right. Right.
The last time they came back, I think it was 2012, maybe. It was before the...
So it's almost like a durational reform group.
Yes, and they're never active. In other times, the band members go on to do other things, more meaningful things too for the society and the people, but... As Rage Against the Machine, as that vehicle, they reform every, you know, before.
That is really cool.
Like that is but so
yeah,
cool.
But at the same time, I guess like they're very conscious about the process.
Super.
Yeah. Right?
And they know that their music can affect people. And that is the most powerful tool that they have.
It's like hibernating cicadas.
Yeah. You know? And when it's time to come out,
they all come out at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, I hope I get to have the chance to catch Rage Against the Machine in Asia if they ever come here. I'm sure. But okay, and here's another problem. Reunited bands cost a bomb to go and watch. And
really? Well, because they're big names.
Yeah, well, for sure. But like, they're banking on the antiquity.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, because also the their fans have grown up, so they should be richer now.
Yeah, so that's a line that I read on The Guardian. They say, like, you know, the old fans now have more disposable income and the bags of nostalgia, so you would be able to spend. A local band, Butterfingers, recently did a 20 years anniversary show. They've never been a band for 10 years, probably. And they played to like 10,000, 12,000 people.
That's amazing. Though.
And I would actually pay for Butterfingers.
Totally, and the tickets are not cheap.
Yeah, all right. Cards on table. This is how I feel about this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that I think that the Rage Against Machine concept of coming out known specific dates, you know, that the before the elections, like, fantastic. It's a great idea. But I'm really only interested in when the artist produced that specific piece of art at that time. Afterwards, there's a drop off in my desire to watch them play it live.
Mm.
I mean, you know, I happen to love David Bowie. But Station to Station came out in, 76? I only want to know how he performed it in 76, 77. Afterwards, it's kind of like fun to watch the YouTube clips, but it doesn't really mean as much.
Right.
Because I've got the album.
Yeah.
So I'm not really interested in watching
if you
comeback.
Could go into a time travel machine and go to 1985 to see him play it?
No, wouldn't want to.
Mm.
Wouldn't want to. I want to go see it 76, 77.
Yeah. Because somehow, like, the craft reflects the time, right? I mean, the headspace you were in.
And absolutely.
That's why it was so compelling.
So to wrap up, I'm going to move on, though. And sadly, he will not tell us the name of the band, but anyway, what to do. The last part of the show, recommendations, where I recommend something that think might be of interest, and I go first. And I want to ask you, are you people familiar with the social ill, the disease that's happening called binge watching?
Yeah, I think I was just diagnosed with that.
Yeah. So I unfortunately, well, not so much me, actually, my wife has discovered The Crown.
Oh.
Which tells the life and times of Queen Elizabeth, Queen of England, and her family and stuff. These are people who are all, pretty much all, still alive.
Yeah.
But it's told as if it's kind of ancient history. And I got to say, it's really well made. It actually is. It's really genuinely good filmmaking and great acting and very expensive production. I think they are Netflix productions, actually.
Yes, they are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Have you watched it, Rahma?
I've heard of it. I tried watching like one or two episodes. I haven't really like gotten, because I think like I have to be in the right headspace.
Yeah.
To watch it, yeah. Right? Because this is also like one thing that I realized, I cannot start watching serials, because then when I do that, I'm never gonna,
the binge thing comes, yeah, in. Like, so what was your last,
the last one? The last one is the series that I recommended on A Bit of Culture, which is Money Heist,
right.
The Spanish series. Yeah, I did not get out of my bed for like 2 days, which okay. is not good.
Wow.
But did not regret it.
Okay. Well, I haven't really binge watched this. My wife's been doing it, but I've been like walking in and out and sitting down and watching for a bit. It's just really good filmmaking.
I mean, at least it's a moving series, right? There's episode 1, 2, whatever.
Yeah.
I remember my mother binge watched on a Bollywood movie for half a year. It was Kuch Kuch Hota Hai every other day.
What?
When I come back from school, it's on. And I walk into different parts of the movie.
Really?
And eventually I put it all together into one whole story. I'm like, oh, okay, I know what happened to her. And that's the bad guy. Yeah, he's terrible. But
it's a long film, though.
It is, three hours plus, I remember. Yeah. And I may have sat down to it in one sitting, but yeah, those binge watch and repeats are fresh in my memory. Thankfully for me, I've never had the time to spend binge watching anything on Netflix. So...
get your family, get your wife, your kids, yeah. Get somebody.
It's out there.
and then you'll be piecing together the crown. Say, it's like, oh, she's like young there, but then she gets old. Yeah, yeah.
I can tell history.
Yeah. Okay, so that's my. It is genuinely good filmmaking. It's The Crown, and I dismissed it for ages, but then you know it's like, phew, it's pretty good actually. So, Rahma.
Yes, so I would like to recommend an article. So it's called What Happened to the Stolen Kids of Sarah Lawrence. If I'm not mistaken, this was probably published in April by the New York Times Magazine Vertical.
Sarah Lawrence,
the college, yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Mm. So it's just like, this is something that I just discovered this year, and I would always, like every other week, I would always just go to The Cut and try to like see if they publish any like long reads, because the stories are always these quirky, mysterious things that, oh, that happened, that kind of stuff. But it's also very well reported, very well written. So my favorite from this year is this article about, I wouldn't like spoil it for you guys, but it's about, Sarah Lawrence is in an all-girls university in New York. And it's about this one guy who ended up like moving into the dorms of his daughter and ended up forming a cult with the daughter's friends.
What?
And basically these kids are just like never heard of again. Mm. And like it raised questions about, you know, security in campuses and dorms and whether or not like outsiders are allowed to come in and all that. And I went to college in the States and I experienced this, but it was a public university, so it's a bit more, and it was in a town. So people going in and out is a bit hard because it's a big university. But I remember this, like each time that something bad happened, it's usually not the kids from the university. It's always that. So there's always this thing about trying to befriend people that you met at a grocery store and like take them, you know? So you would think that's, oh, there's no way this could happen. It could happen, yeah. So,
Facebook. I'm telling you.
It's the evil.
Yeah. That's a very well-reported story. It's like Stolen Kids of Sarah Lawrence and how these kids are just like amazing, smart Manhattanite, you know?
When did all these events happen?
This has been happening since, like, I think, like, the past 5 years or so.
Oh, wow.
So I think one of the alum probably started writing about it and then collaborated with someone from The Cut. Yeah, but anyway, in general, just, like, check out The Cut long reads. Usually it's really, really good. And start with this particular article. And then I think you guys would never stop reading them again.
I was going to say, you know, only in America. But actually, no.
But actually, no.
No.
Yeah.
Actually, no.
Yeah. It sounds so...
kind of
feasible in
here.
Especially in Malaysia.
What's it called again?
The Stolen Kits on Sarah Lawrence, New York Magazine, The Cut.
Okay, cool. That's terrifying. Okay, Ali.
So, basing off your topic of deleting Facebook, I'm recommending, number one, you to get on Instagram because I'm going to tell you about the joys that I found with some fan pages of old rock and roll photos on Instagram.
Oh, I've seen one of those.
Yeah, so there are many. And I'm going to list down three of my favorites that I follow. But Instagram, you know, is a great platform because it collects great photos that saves you the trouble of Googling for it by yourself. Or even like going out to Big Bad Wolf sale to buy one of those rock and roll photo books. And most of the time they are, you know, these books are contained to a band or one artist. So if you're buying a Jimi Hendrix book, it's all Jimi Hendrix photos only. But these pages on Instagram are collecting all the great photos of you know, old rock and roll. And you'd have a posting on like a photo of David Bowie and Jimi Hendrix, or The Clash hanging out with somebody like Cher, and also the day that the Beatles met Bob Dylan. These are great photos.
With text as well?
Yes, obviously with captions. Some of them are better than others.
Yeah.
But yeah, just go on Instagram and just, I don't know, hashtag Led Zeppelin or hashtag rock and roll or something. Look it up in the search function. And then you will come across all these fan pages of old rock and roll photos. I'm going to give you three that's worth following. One is quite simply straight up called Photographs of Rock. It takes you back through rock and roll history without really having to read really thick books about, you know, the movement of New York punk in the 70s and blah, blah, blah. Just look at the photos. And that's why Instagram is great for me, because it's so visual.
Yeah, it gives you instant kind of context.
Yeah, weren't you like a little bit hesitant before about Instagram also?
Yeah, I'm having trouble processing. I need to find Instagram. It's like, what?
Yeah, I know.
Are you an influencer?
Not in any way possible. But again, we don't post. We coast.
Oh, okay. All right. Too cool for that.
Yeah. So go to these pages. Another one is History of Punk. Also great fan page on Instagram. And La Galerie du Rock, cool, if I'm pronouncing it correctly.
Yeah.
These three are the best for like history lessons on rock and roll, just through photos.
So kids out there, if you want to know what a Led Zeppelin is
or
a Cher, and you've been hearing Ali Johan talk about a Ramon, check out the names of them.
One of them is Photographs of Rock, History of Punk, and La Galerie du Rock on Instagram.
Yeah, bon. And so that brings us to the end of this week's show of A Bit of Culture. Only remains for me, oh, by the way, I just want to say that we do have a Facebook page, but we're going to be terminating it. So
yeah, it's going to be shut down.
It's going to be shut down. We're taken around the back of the shed and
shut.
No, it's not. It's going to be sent to a farm, and it's going to live on the farm, and it'll be very happy.
Yes. So we just had a talk about deleting our personal accounts, but we're going to start with the Bit of Culture Facebook page. That's going to go first.
That's crazy, because you've been like, you would always end the sessions with like, check out our Facebook page.
I know, and producer, he is producer. He would always be shaking his head like, don't say that.
Nobody goes there.
Nobody goes there. We don't do anything there. So it's not if Mark Zuckerberg, and I know Mark Zuckerberg does listen to A Bit of Culture. It's not it's not anything personal against you. It's just that we don't do anything there, so we're not going to tie you down. So anyway, only remains for me now to thank these two wonderful guests. We have Rahma Pauzi.
Thank you so much for having me.
A pleasure. And producer Ali. Ali Johan.
Always here. Thank you so much.
And myself, Cam Ruslan. Please join us next week for another exciting episode of Bit of Culture here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.